Case number 13-5081, Ariana Clay, et al., appellants, versus Leon E. Panetta, former Secretary of Defense, et al. Ms. Burke for the appellants, Mr. Sturgio for the appellees.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Susan Burke. I'm representing the rape survivors in this case. What your honors have before you is a difficult decision for the bench to make. What we have laid out in the complaint is a pattern and practice of executive branch officials ignoring what Congress told them to do to fix the serious problem of rape and sexual assault in the military.
Can I start with the very fundamental? Is that our job to do? If Congress disregards what the executive branch tells them to do, do we call Congress to task on this?
It's the opposite, Your Honor. It's the executive branch ignoring what Congress told them to
That's
do.
That's right. I'm sorry.
Yes, actually, you do. And the reason why is that in this field...
Congress is fully engaged in this. Or at least reading the newspapers seems to suggest that. But one of the things they have not done is create a cause of action here. They've done lots of other things, but they haven't created a cause of action here.
But, Your Honor, it would make congressional engagement meaningless if you simply let go to the wayside proof that the executive branch officials ignored that engagement, ignored the direct mandates that what told them what they were to do. And so in order to have our system work, we have to have congressional engagement.
You're asking us to do something that, under Bivens, courts have the power to do, right?
That's correct.
And that is, where there's not a statute creating a cause of action for violations of constitutional right, courts may do so, right? But the power of courts to do that has been severely limited, right? I mean, only two instances since Bivens of courts finding that implied cause of action. Congress can do this, right? Congress has the power to create a cause of action to give your clients the relief they seek, and they haven't done it.
Well, two responses, Your Honor. First is that the people that I am representing have been harmed by past actions.
Right.
Even if Congress acts to create a new cause of action, it's not going to help these people that were harmed by executive branch malfeasance. The second thing I would point out is that although it is very difficult and it is something that the court should not do lightly, the Supreme Court itself, in the context of deciding whether or not there should be a Bivens cause of action when military members were harmed, said very clearly, this is from the Stanley case, this is essentially a policy judgment, and there is no scientific or analytic demonstration of the right answer. You are writing on a blank slate with this particular problem.
Well, I don't think you can stop your analysis of Stanley at that point, can you? You have to go on to what the Supreme Court stated in that case in its holding.
In that holding, first, they said themselves, both in the Stanley case, they noted that the Chappelle holding was limited to its facts, and obviously the Stanley holding as well. What we argue is that those cases are able to be distinguished by looking at it as whether or not the context, whether or not the activity at issue is something that is in the core of the military power. Obviously, there is tremendous judicial deference when we're talking about the military acting qua military, how many bombs are being dropped, how many missiles are being launched. What we're dealing with here is that subsection of behavior that the military, that the executive branch, in their own brief, has admitted is wholly outside the scope of military employment. We're talking about the crimes of rape and sexual assault. Nothing uniquely military, not part of military duty, not even according to the military's own brief, not within the scope of military employment. So for that reason, we believe that the deference that's owing to the military decision-making is lower. And then we look at what we're actually asking you to do. We are not asking you to intrude on any type of military decision-making that is not expressly mandated by Congress.
It seems like, though, I guess, I mean, you've raised some very serious issues in your complaint and made some serious assertions, and I guess the question for us is whether this court is the right place in which to air those grievances. And we've talked a little bit about Stanley and Chappell, and I think you're right to recognize that they at least pose some serious issues for you. But there's also Scheer, and what Scheer seemed to say is that when you're dealing with matters that involve the management of the military, the courts stay their hand and don't get involved. And by the nature of the sorts of things that you're alleging, it seems like they run somewhat headlong into that admonition, because what you're asserting is that the way in which the military has managed these issues, which involves the management of their personnel, the management of supervising officers, the management of these kinds of actions and claims when they arise, those are necessarily bound up with the sorts of concerns that this year the court was concerned with?
Well, Your Honor, I would agree if what we were dealing with is a topic that Congress had not spoken to. But what we are dealing with here are instances in which Congress has actually decided and acted, saying, listen, we have been watching the military try to manage this problem.
Every time you make that argument, and help me here, I think you undercut your argument. Every time you say Congress acted in this area, it brings to my mind the question, yes, but Congress hasn't created a cause of action. And that's your fundamental problem.
But you want
us to do something that Congress has not done. And the more you point out that Congress is deeply involved in it, the more it persuades me that, yeah, they're deeply involved, and for whatever reason, they have decided not to create this cause of action.
But, Your Honor, the reason why it's so important that Congress was involved and the reason that we're here before you is the judiciary is the place you go when individual people who are bestowed with the trappings of officialdom ignore Congress and do things they aren't supposed to do. The role
That's
of the judiciary.
That's a pretty broad statement. We're supposed to do that every time that happens?
The judiciary is the place where people, individuals who are harmed by official malfeasance. That is where the doors of the courthouse should be open.
You're relying upon that language in Bivens that every Supreme Court since then has run from and said that's far too broad. Not every harm gets redressed by courts. Not every problem that is raised, and this is more than a problem, and this horrible set of cuts, but not every harm that occurs is redressed by courts.
This problem, however, sir, should be redressed by the courts, because this problem has been going on for decades. This problem has been addressed by our Congress, and the officials who were charged to follow those mandates ignore those mandates in a way that directly caused harm to my clients.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Some of the mandates are to make a list, all right, to set up, you know, a panel, to do some other what I'll call sort of administrative things. But they don't, or do they, get to the heart of what your clients are complaining about?
They do, Your Honor. Because,
and why is that?
For example, take something that sounds somewhat administrative, a database. Mm-hmm. What is the database? The database is a compilation of all of the persons who are alleged to have committed rapes. And as a practical matter, what has happened time and time again is most rapes, as you may know, are committed by serial rapists. Approximately 80% of rapes are engaged in by someone who has raped before. By failing to follow that congressional mandate to create a database that identifies and provides information to the law enforcement about who is doing the raping, they created a serious and direct risk that ended up with our clients being raped. And so it may sound ministerial, but these are very serious matters that had they done what Congress told them to do, they would have been able to fix the problem.
Well, the Supreme Court had a case not on like that, where the argument was the military knew about the dangers of this person, and nevertheless the court stepped back.
But Your Honor, in that case, the Congress had not spoken directly to the question of murder, of service members murdering others. This is a different context. This is not, Shearer's not on all fours, nor are Chappelle, nor Stanley. I recognize, Your Honors, that I'm asking for a heavy lift, but I think that the service members who are serving our nation deserve that consideration and deserve the policy analysis. For example, the law
Let me just say, I think some of the dissenting opinions make your case. All right? But it didn't persuade a majority of the justices.
Well, Your Honor, the dissenting opinion in the LSD case I find personally persuasive. But you're right, it did not persuade. But we have a different, this is why I go back to the context. We have a substantive difference than the Stanley case. There, as egregious as the facts were, they were being done for a military purpose, for a military mission. Let us involuntarily give LSD to see what happens to people. It was done for a military purpose. Here, the malfeasance, the gross negligence, the complete flouting of what Congress told them to do, it served no military purpose. It only served the personal interests of the men in charge who didn't want to do what they'd been told to do by Congress.
But some of the dissenters made those precise points.
Well, Your Honor, there you had a different situation because...
I agree you can, you know, parse this finely and say the facts are a little different. I understand that. But that is the point. And to the extent that you're saying Davis is controlling here, I mean, the argument is there was no remedy available to the victim in Davis. Here, Congress has set up a procedure. It may not be working the way your clients think it should. And indeed, Congress has spoken and said a number of things about we want the military to do better. But it has not, as Judge Griffith has repeated, set up a cause of action for damages.
But the problem here is that the military leadership did not do what Congress told them to do.
Why not bring a case under the Administrative Procedure Act? I mean, you don't get money damages, but if you're looking for structural change for, you know, the military to abide by law that Congress passed, isn't that your avenue of relief?
Your Honor, certainly there's two different issues. One is how do we prevent other people from being hurt in the future? And on that, yes, of course, the APA, systemic reform, all the things that we are doing. But more practically, I'm dealing with human beings whose lives were irrevocably harmed. And we cannot undo that wrong in any way. But the least we can do is say, in this set of circumstances, when you have Congress acting, you have the military leadership ignoring what Congress told them to do, and you have these individuals being directly harmed by that malfeasance, should there be money damages?
Can I ask you this question? So what, in terms of getting over what you characterize as a heavy lift, are the two pillars of your argument that A, this case is different because of the congressional action, and B, this case is different because the underlying actions don't serve a legitimate military purpose? Is that?
Yes, Your Honor. That is the path that we are laying out for you to walk along. And now, what we would note is
that... Can I just ask you, with respect to the first one, so I think I get stuck in much the same place as my two colleagues. And in particular, the Supreme Court has said that the reason we have special factors counseling hesitation in the military context in particular is twofold. One, because of military disciplinary structures, and those are implicated in some measure here, too. But two, because of Congress's activity in the field. So it's specifically saying that Congress's activity in the field, is actually a reason to abstain from affording any kind of judicial remedy. So it does seem like that is a pretty significant hurdle in the way of you're getting home on this, or...
Well, Your Honor, I understand the thinking that, well, because Congress is speaking, we should do nothing. But what we're saying is that in the way our system is set up, there has to be a resort for an individual who's harmed when an executive branch official ignores what Congress told them to do. And what I would note is very troubling about the district court decision, because this is where failure to imply a remedy leaves you. The district court writes, even if it could be shown that defendants intentionally refused to comply with congressional directives, reviewing this refusal would require the court to analyze why military management decided to ignore the directives and whether those decisions were justified. Essentially, the district court has created a structure in which the military is so immunized from any sort of review that military leadership is able just to ignore what Congress says. Our view is that you have to act, and you have to issue a decision that says no. Military leadership does not have the prerogative to simply ignore Congress. They may think that what Congress decided to do on the rape and sexual assault issue is stupid. They don't get to decide. Our elected officials get to decide. The government has attached all of these reams of congressional action that are being taken.
And don't our elected officials have lots of tools at their disposal right now to act? You're painting a world as if someone is wronged and horribly wronged, that they always get access to the courts. But there's a whole series of cases where we decide that, no, that's a wrong that's not to be addressed by the courts. It's to be addressed by the political branches. And we have lots of cases like that.
But, Your Honor, this particular case, you should not slam those courthouse doors shut on these service members. Congress is looking at the issue. They're holding oversight hearings.
That's the wrong metaphor to use. The question is, has the Congress ever opened the door? Not whether we're slamming an open door.
If you abstain, it's abstaining from exercising a jurisdiction that you have under Bivens.
That's a little less loaded language than saying we're slamming the door on people who've been egregiously harmed.
Well, they have been egregiously.
The door hasn't been opened to them, is the point.
Your Honor, I believe the Supreme Court.
If you want the door open to them, the argument would go, the place to do that is across the street.
Your Honor, I believe the door has been opened by the Bivens case.
Okay.
And that by abstaining, you essentially depart from the rationale of Bivens in a situation that it direly needs judicial attention, because we cannot, if we have executive branch not conforming to the congressional directives, we are left with lack of civilian control.
And that's your criticism of the other circuit cases.
That's one of them. I do believe that in this...
No, that's the main point in your brief.
Well, I do believe that in this instance, for the two reasons, that this is one that is appropriate to have a Bivens cause of action.
Well, you don't make much of Green versus Carlson, but I wondered about the analogy there, and I was going to ask the government counsel about it, so you can answer if you want. But what about the analogy to that case?
Do you want me to do that now, or do you want me to respond on rebuttal?
Well, you can respond now, and you can add on rebuttal if you want.
Okay. Well, I think that this particular circumstance is unique, and what you have before you is not something that is covered by that case or any case. I think we're dealing...
Here's the analogy. All right. The prisoner was in the custody of the prison officials, the correctional system. The Supreme Court has repeatedly said courts owe great deference to correctional officials in administering their system, and courts should not intrude. Let the correctional officials decide how to maintain order and discipline within their facilities. All right? The Supreme Court nevertheless found a Bivens action where the lack of medical treatment and then the medical malpractice actually resulted in death. So by analogy, the argument would flow. Being raped is cruel and unusual punishment. All right, while you're serving your country, it has no military mission associated with it whatsoever. And that is not the argument the government makes. Indeed, the government acknowledges this is a horrible situation. Now, what's wrong with that analogy?
I think because of the prison context, there are some overlaps with the military context. The persons that are being harmed can't exercise self-help. There's that level of coercion that's present there. I think this situation cries out even more clearly for judicial attention and judicial relief, because unlike that case, you actually had Congress speaking, Congress deciding, listen, we have decided, having watched the military leadership struggle with this issue, we have decided they're not managing it well. We're gonna tell them what to do. And yet you had military management not doing that. So in a sense, it would be akin to the case, but with that added layer that you have congressional action, which I think is an important fact that cuts in our direction. So it's certainly analogous as far as it goes, but I would say this case cries out even more so for Bivens action than you had there.
All right, thank you. I'll give you a few minutes on rebuttal.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. I'm Lowell Sturgill from the Department of Justice representing the defendants. who are all former or current high-level military officials who've been sued in their individual capacities under a Bivens theory. The district court correctly declined to recognize a new Bivens cause of action here on behalf of the plaintiffs because, as you've discussed, each of their allegations challenged the defendant's management of the military. And it's clear enough from the Supreme Court's cases in Shearer and Chappelle and Stanley.
So does the military get a pass on all this just when it can put something under the rubric of management decision?
Well,
I mean, clearly battlefield management, no one's talking about this, but can, I mean, the military is a vast operation that covers, you know, soup to nuts in terms of the life of our service members. And so does the, whenever you come in and invoke management, do we then say no Bivens?
That's correct. I mean, I can't think of an allegation against the high-level...
Any management decision.
If what they're doing is within the scope of their employment as military officials running the military, then it seems per se that what they're doing is...
And your authority for that? Your authority for that sweeping proposition is...
Well, I think you can... That seems to be what Shearer and Chappelle and Stanley say. I mean, as you've discussed, Shearer involved a case where the allegation was the military failed to supervise a service member who then went out and murdered another service member. The court acknowledged that murder is not doesn't serve a military purpose, but certainly supervising soldiers does. Now, maybe there's some hypothetical I can't think of that...
Well, Brooks and Brown arise in the military context, but actions are allowed to proceed.
Well, right. The plaintiffs here have, as you've discussed, have the potential of an APA suit. If they want to come to court...
Those are FTCA actions.
I'm sorry?
Those are FTCA actions, right? And
which ones?
Brooks and Brown.
Oh, right. Those cases were not military to serve. Those cases, the court, Supreme Court found that the allegations were not related to the military service. And in neither case did the plaintiff challenge the defendant's management of the military. Rather, those were garden variety car accidents, and Brooks, I believe, was a car accident. And the allegation wasn't that somebody had failed to supervise the people who caused the accident. It was just a respondent superior type claim against the government.
So in Brown, for example, which was an action in a VA, I think it arose out of a VA hospital, administration care at a VA hospital, if an allegation were tacked on that said that the reason why this occurred is because supervisors failed to assert significant authority over the physicians who were administering these procedures and put into place a lax atmosphere where this kind of terrible care can happen, then it would have been a military management case.
Well, that allegation would have been barred by the Ferris Doctrine in the FTCA case, or not the proper basis for a Bivens action in a Bivens case. Now, it may be that the other allegation, the one that, the military is responsible for this is under principles of respondeat superior, well, then you would still have to go through the incident to service analysis, which typically involves you analyze the person's duties, the service member's duty status, where the location of the injury, and whether the activity in question is related to service. But again, you don't have to do that here because it's clear enough from Shearer and the other cases that if on the face of the complaint the plaintiffs are challenging the management of the military and not some sort of garden variety car accident and a respondent superior theory, you don't have to go through that. You know that there's the sort of intrusion on the military mission that the Supreme Court has said is impermissible in the FTCA context and the Bivens context.
And what, is the, what is the intrusion on military mission here?
Well, here the plaintiffs, for example, are one of the things they argue is that some of the defendants refused to implement a sexual assault database. Well, again, that's part of the defendant's job as part of the military to implement this database, which relates to what's going on in the military. And as we explain in our brief, actually what happened is the military lacked the technical capability at the time to do this database. So they went to Congress and asked for an extension. Congress extended the deadline, and then the DOD met that deadline. So the plaintiff's claim of the merits doesn't even work, but you can see that, you know, for these defendants to be able to satisfy this condition involved the military mission. They had to, they would have had to direct other members of the military to compile the database, and, you know, the allegations they didn't. And I want to say also, it's interesting, when I reread the plaintiff's brief, I believe it's page 13, they concede, or they actually affirmatively argue that one of the reasons you should authorize a Bivens claim here is because the plaintiffs would not have an FTCA claim against these defendants, because that would be FARA's bar. That would be incident to service. Well, I think that actually concedes away the main issue in the case. I mean, if they can't, it's the same test for whether the court recognizes a Bivens cause of action or allows an FTCA claim. Well, if they concede that there can't be an FTCA claim because this is incident to service, it's the same result has to hold with respect to the Bivens cause of action. Also, nobody's mentioned Doe versus Rumsfeld yet, but that's, of course, a decision from this circuit, which held that, again, in a similar context, similar in that plaintiffs there were challenging the defense management of the military. The court said that it was impermissible to create a Bivens cause of action. That case involved plaintiffs who were military contractors who claimed that they were wrongly detained and treated and tortured by the government.
So again, if these members of the class had been off duty, would that change the whole analysis?
Not in this case. Again, and the reason why is their allegations are not that Rumsfeld and these other defendants actually engaged in these acts. Their allegations go to the defendant's management of the military. And because of that, Shearer says you don't have to go to the other type of analysis for analyzing a FARA's type case, which looks at factors like duty status and what the activity was in question, because you know on the face of the complaint that the plaintiffs are challenging the management of the military, and that's enough.
So hypothetically, if the allegation was the management by the military is, what, non-existent? People are dying left and right as a result of these rapes, and nothing's being done in the military. Because that allegation would implement military management?
Right.
That's the end of the case?
That's right.
And has the Supreme Court gone that far so yet? In other words, where the harm has nothing to do with military objectives?
That's the Shearer case.
Yeah.
Again, the harm in the Shearer case
right.
was a murder.
Right.
And the Supreme Court said there's no FTCA cause of action.
Right.
Because the complaint is not talking about, it's not alleging that the defendants committed the murder. The complaint is alleging that the defendants negligently engaged in the management of the military.
I was going beyond negligence. That's what I'm trying to get that hypothetical on the table.
An intentional tort?
Tantamount. I mean, disasters are all around, and all these high-ranking military officials acknowledge this is a disastrous situation. It's terrible.
Well, I think Stanley is the closest case
yeah,
because the plaintiffs
so.
In that case argued that what the military was doing and giving LSD and other drugs to service
members. But see, there it was in connection with a military study. I mean, I'm not trying to defend it, but I mean, it was clearly part of the military mission. They were doing this study about the effect of hallucinatory drugs.
Well, again, I just haven't been able to think of a hypothetical that would not fall within this exception. If a plaintiff could make some allegation against a high-level military official that did not involve their management of the military, then that would be a permissible, it would not be barred by the special factors doctrine. I just can't think of what that would be. And this case is certainly not that case, again. Because
so you think the special factors doctrine, as it applies to the military, is somewhat unique?
It's different than the prisons, for example.
Yeah.
I wanted to address Carlson.
Right, that's where I was going. Yeah.
Sure. I think the basic answer is you don't have to argue by analogy here because we have specific decisions from the Supreme Court regarding the military context. If you had some separate kind of context where you were trying to decide, well, should the military cases apply or should the prison cases apply, then of course you would have mm-hmm. to choose. But here you have a long list of cases from the Supreme Court in this case that answer what the analysis is in the military mm-hmm. cases. So you don't then have to leap over and say, well, how does that jive with the prison cases? That's, you know, that's an interesting question for the Supreme Court to address. But I would say even if you were to draw the comparison, I think if you look at the Supreme Court's cases on the military context, that the court defers more substantially in military cases than in prison cases. And maybe the best way to see that is to compare a case like Goldman versus Weinberger, where the Supreme Court, the Yarmulke case, where the chaplain wanted to wear the yarmulke, mm-hmm. and the Supreme Court just almost engaged in no analysis whatsoever.
Right.
Just said, you know, you can't have that kind of a free exercise. You guys in the military and stressed the need to almost
uniformity.
Completely defer.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, in the prison case, you have Turner versus Saffoli yeah. and Chavez versus Alone, which are certainly deferential, but in my mind, they're not deferential to that level. So I think even if you were to look at, you know, try to do the analogy, that's how that would come out. There's more deference in the military context. But I don't think you need to do that because we have cases that answer the military context.
So no matter the maladministration, the Supreme Court has closed the door.
Right. To a Bivens case.
Not to a Bivens action, yeah.
Not to necessarily an APA
right.
cause of action. That's a separate question. Basically, we think the district court's opinion is correct and that this case is controlled by this court's Doe decision and by the Supreme Court decisions we discussed, and that's all that we need to hold in order to affirm the judgment below, that there's a special factor that counsels against hesitation, as the district court said. And I'm happy to try to answer any further questions, but if not, we rely on our briefs and the district court's opinion.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
The fundamental flaw with the government's argument is that it ignores the fact that managerial discretion vested in military leadership does not extend so far as to encompass things that are governed by Congress speaking. So what you have here is not military leadership just exercising the broad discretion that has been given to them. What you have here is military leadership opting to ignore Congress telling them what to do. And in our system, Congress has the power to tell the military what to do. The military does not have the power to decide that the congressional mandates are nonsensical, the congressional mandates are too expensive, too much trouble, something they really don't want to do. And that's what has happened here. Contrary to the way the government has laid out the facts, what we have alleged and what is the reality is that you have a pattern of these particular men ignoring what they have been told to do by their boss, Congress.
You made a very passionate and eloquent argument when you were up before about how your clients have no redress if we don't give them the Bivens action. They have tort actions available, right, or no?
No.
Have they sued any of their assaulters for damages? Isn't that available to them?
Well, Your Honor, they have not. Well, first let me put out the damage that what
right.
we're seeking. Obviously, they were damaged by the rape. But what we are seeking here is the damages that were caused by what happened after they were raped. They were retaliated against and they lost their careers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, they can go after the individual rapist for the physical harm caused by the rape. But they can't go after the rapist for the retaliation and for being forced to give up, you know, the 10 years of their life they spent in the service. They can't go after that from the rapist. So there is no real remedy for these people other than bringing these constitutional claims, because the people that really hurt them the most are the people that we're suing. And it is the former secretaries that didn't do what they were supposed to do that caused all this damage, caused the loss of the careers, caused the ongoing retaliation. And, you know, as the military has in fact admitted in oversight hearings, the retaliation is rampant and they haven't done what they need to stop it. So I think that the government's argument proves too much, because it basically says that laws passed by Congress should be able to be ignored at the will of military leadership. And that's not how this country operates, and that's not how it should operate. And so when you look at the special factors, and you look at whether as a policy matter, as a judgment matter, you should abstain here, you need to look at the context and look at what message it is you're sending if you say that the military leadership doesn't even have to listen to Congress. Implying a Bivens remedy here is not intrusive on the military. It's a damages remedy. It is a damages remedy for past misconduct, past harms to these individuals. And so because of the unique set of circumstances here, this is a unique case, and it is one that really you should not abstain, and you should imply the Bivens action and allow these people to go back down to the district court. Obviously, we'll have our work cut out for us down there on causation and the like, but we should be entitled to have our day in court.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you.